Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Len Casper is on Twitter, at Len Casper, and the Cubs TV voice joins us now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Len, that yesterday is on my list of games that you kind of want to put in a time capsule to show people what can happen within a given game to provide all the action you need to really entertain over 3 hours.
No, I agree with you, Dan. It was a very entertaining game throughout. There was some action. We saw strikeouts from Darvish and Gray. You saw a couple of home runs from the Cubs. And good defense, base running, that pickoff play at first, and a controversial seventh-inning stretch. So what more could you ask for? And by the way, I do not want to burst anyone's bubble. But considering I was sitting about 2 feet away from Coach Nagy while he was singing the stretch, and when I did hear the word, I thought, people are going to think this is what he said. But Connor nailed it. There's a Pennsylvania dialect thing going on.
Yep.
And there's a T in that word.
It's
you just
not
didn't
audible.
Really hear it.
Right. It's not audible.
It's
assumed to be there. It's elided. It's just not audible.
Correct. So you guys can have your fun with it, but I'm just telling you what I heard.
Oh, you're not taking the fun out of this one, Casper.
We're
no
absolutely
way.
Having no, the fun.
No, no.
I wonder, you know, Len, I was walking or watching back through the Darvish Puig at bat for how that went, just the fastballs, the pitch selection and that kind of stuff. And I noticed that while that was going on, you guys and Doug Glanville were going through the Bodie play at the plate, which, you know, that was the broadcast thing to do. That was the play that had just happened. But Tommy Hotovy came out there at the behest of Darvish, we find out. And it's because they wanted to go back over the scouting report for Puig in another big situation right after the play at the plate with Bodie. I find Darvish taking that kind of initiative pretty fascinating. I wonder if it struck you in any way similar, or if you'd seen some of that before and we just had missed it.
No, I hadn't seen it before, and I think it speaks to not only the comfort Darvish has with his pitching coach and with his teammates and being here in a Cub uniform, but the confidence he has right now. And the fact that, you know, last year and maybe even early this year, pitching to a scouting report was difficult because he couldn't command his fastball. And when you can't really figure out where your pitches are going to land, it's hard to have a game plan. And I think in a lot of cases, the scouting report just ended up getting kind of thrown out the window because he was walking the park. Well, that has changed. The walks have gone way down. The stuff is playing as swing and miss stuff. And he's not behind in the count all the time. And it allows him, I think, to dig into those game plans a little bit more deeply. And we saw it on display yesterday. I thought that the Darvish-Puig matchups were all fascinating. They all took about 15 minutes apiece because both guys work very slowly. But it was fun to watch. And I think this is Darvish at his best. I don't know if you can count on him being this good the rest of the way, but I have to give my partner credit. I think going into this season, we were asked on some show who's the most important, you know, player on the team. And JD said Darvish, which I thought was very fascinating. He thought that the only way the Cubs are going to get to that next level is if Yu Darvish is Yu Darvish again. And that was a huge question mark going into the season. It still may be a question mark, but I don't think it's as big a wonder or a concern as it was 3 months ago. He's been terrific here lately.
He really defies a lot of the modern analysis because his pitches don't fit neatly into the buckets that are provided by FanGraphs or Pitch Effects, Baseball Savant, that kind of thing. When it says slider or it says cutter, it can mean so many different things because of how he feels the ball coming out of his hand. So when we start looking at pitch frequencies and start examining heat maps and all that stuff, it's kind of hard to do because he has more variance built into his pitching profile.
I totally agree, and I'm a stickler for getting the pitches right in terms of how I describe them. And on the NBC Sports Chicago telecasts, they have a built-in graphic that immediately gives you what the pitch is. And it's tied in, I think, to MLB, and it flashes on the left field board when you're at Wrigley Field. But, you know, obviously cutters, you know, from him you're going to see in the high 80s, maybe even 90, 91. You're going to see the slider at 83, 84, 85, and then the curveball 79 to 80. But every once in a while, you'll see an 82, and it'll flash cutter. And I don't know if that's actually what's happening, but it is fascinating to me that you can see a slider speed depicted as a cutter. So I'm with you. I think he does manipulate his breaking pitches. Spin is so important now. Sonny Gray spins the ball incredibly well. We've talked about the Yankees' bullpen in terms of velocity. They may be the best in the business, but they actually throw more breaking balls than I think any bullpen in baseball. So with the more velocity we're seeing, it's counterintuitive to think, but cutters, sliders, and the occasional curveball are becoming way more important.
We saw Jason Hayward put one in the right field corner in a big spot for the Cubs.
What
it was after,
bat.
Yeah, I think it was after three foul balls down the right side. There might have been another foul a little bit before that in the at-bat. A terrific hang in there. It really wasn't even hang in there, AB. He kind of controlled that the way we kind of – it was like a vintage Joey Votto at-bat where he controlled the thing. I can't remember the last time I saw Hayward control one like that. He has been – unbelievable.
He really has. He hasn't been swinging and missing very much. And, you know, when you just feel like there's a game plan and that he's not going to get himself out. And that's not something we would have said for any length of time or a long stretch, really, in his first three seasons as a Cub, right? That it felt like a lot of his outs were very routine. The lazy ground ball to second base, the infield pop-up, we are not seeing that very much. You're still going to see strikeouts because of velocity, and that's the way the game is today. But by and large, he's hitting the ball with authority. He's hitting it both directions. And if you throw him a fastball toward the outside part of the plate, and it's in the zone, look out. He's going to do a lot of damage with it. And again, you know, I go back to Darvish. You can just see a much more confident guy in Jason Hayward. And if it's hard to believe, but his defense has even gotten better. And he was one of the best defensive outfielders in the game. And I've already called it. I said the other day that he's going to win the Gold Glove. I mean, it's done, right? He's going to be the Gold Glover again and right. It'll be the sixth of his career.
Yeah.
This is the best defensive season I've seen him have.
Meanwhile, Chris Bryant is binging, and he's done something. His last two home runs have been notable in that previously this year, and I haven't gone back in all of the data here. I'm just going with my scout's eye on this. I mean, I know Connor noticed it too, you know, brought it up, and then we saw it again yesterday. The inside fastball, the good hard fastball inside, he has fouled so many off trying to stay inside the ball. But now the last couple, he has turned on that inside fastball. And rather than thinking middle away, he's thinking put it off the video board. And when he starts doing that now, it's a sign where it really looks like he's on these pitches.
It looks like 2016, yep. 2017 yeah. Chris Bryant, doesn't it?
Yep.
And you know, it's the great thing about this game is that there's no black or white. It's all gray. There's tons of nuance. You can never say never or always. And when you hear, you know, hitting coaches and players talk about thinking middle away, that's always a good approach. But every once in a while, you do have to turn on one. And that's what Chris always did best. But he was criticized because he didn't slug to right and right center. So he tried to make that a bigger part of his game, which he's done very well. But every once in a while, again, you do like to see him turn on one. I go back to Mark Loretta, the Cubs bench coach. I saw Mark very early in his career with the Brewers. Derek Jeter was like this too, where they were always trying to get inside the ball and take those inside pitches to right. But in both cases, Jeter more so than Loretta, but Mark did it too. About halfway through their careers, it's like, no, the inside pitch, I'm going to hit the foul pole and left. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while, you have to be able to do that. And, you know, I think using the whole field sometimes does mean pulling the ball. And I think that's what you're getting at.
You know who else did that, too? And this gets back to what we discussed about contact point, about where the sluggers like to hit the ball. And we talked at length with Chris about it. Another really good example, that's Ryan Sandberg. And when we had Jim Fry on years ago, and he was explaining that he noticed the exact same thing about Ryan Sandberg. And says, don't let it get so deep on you. Go out and get it. And it transformed him.
It did. And the Sandberg game is a great example of that, off Bruce Sutter, those two home runs. You know, I think there's always compromise. I was chatting with Corey Dickerson the other day of the Pirates, who is, to me, one of the underrated hitters in the National League, and talking about approach. And he said, I've had people ask me, you know, why don't you go back to 2017 Corey Dickerson and you know, try to hit more home runs? He said, I struck out 160 times, and I don't want to strike out that often. And if that's the case, I'm not going to hit as many home runs. But then I reminded him, and he agreed. I said, but you hit a lot of doubles, so you still slug. And he said, that's right. So we think often of slugging as the guys who hit the home runs, but if you look at Dickerson's profile, you know, he's able to slug 470, 480 by hitting 25 to 30 doubles, and maybe it's 15 to 20 home runs as opposed to 25 to 30 home runs, but a lot more swing and miss. So there's just this constant push and pull for a big league hitter who really knows what he's doing. Joey Votto, another guy. We see him choke up all the time. Mm-hmm. I think his home run totals have gone down, not only because he's aged, but I also think he understands now, I need to change who I am as a hitter. And he's becoming late career Todd Helton. I'm still going to get on base a lot. I'm not going to hit the ball out of the ballpark as much, but I do not want to strike out.
Talking baseball, the Cubs play-by-play man Len Casper here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Theo, tomorrow in this time, we had to move some things around because of a travel schedule situation, so we'll talk to Theo tomorrow on the show. Len, I noticed something because you are so kind to participate in our pregame show here on The Score, and I noticed something in your contribution just a little recently. It was an interview that you did with Philip Ervin of the Cincinnati Reds.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that you have found over the last couple of weeks here a few guys to interview and talk to that just don't have a lot of pub coming their way. And I wonder if you're searching these guys out on purpose. Like if you're looking for guys toward the end who don't get to talk a lot so that you can talk.
Or is it the equivalent of closing time in the bar where, you know, if you're going to find something, you might be somebody who's a little more grateful?
Well, here's how I go about these interviews. Number one, I'm looking for a good story. I'm looking for an interesting guy. And it's not always the player everybody knows about. I think it's fun to talk non-baseball things sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not meant to be newsworthy as much as interesting. So a couple of examples. I interviewed David Hernandez. And it was all about his Tommy John surgery, which was 5 years ago. And the theme, I went into the interview basically saying, you know, you're, I think, 28, 29 when you had the surgery. You're kind of a journeyman guy. So you know when you come back, you're going to be 30. That's got to be a little scary because you think it could be the end of your career. And he really gave me an interesting answer. He talked about it's like running a marathon and the fact that he had Patrick Corbin to rehab with was huge for him. So stuff like that I find really interesting. Philip Ervin, you know, had the 6-for-6 game last Saturday. He's been called up to the big leagues 10 times over the last three seasons, so I found that pretty fascinating as well. I interviewed Derek Dietrich, actually, the last time the Reds were here about getting hit by all these pitches, and he said, my mom hates it, but it's a really good way to reach first base. So, you know, I hope that people find it interesting. I certainly do, and thanks for noticing, Connor. The other thing that I thought you were going to bring up
mm-hmm.
is there's been kind of a strange phenomenon. I interviewed Todd Frazier, and I think he hit two home runs that day. I've interviewed, there was somebody else with the Mets. Oh, Jeff McNeil.
That's right.
He had three or four hits that day. So it feels like everybody I talk to ends up having a really good game against the Cubs. So I may need to change the strategy.
That means that you must have had like an unaired 45-minute conversation with Adam Frazier before the break or something like that. So I don't know if that's a fact.
Frazier, I talked to Frazier during that series.
That's on you, man. I love it. And I think of it as my own personal like pregame show Nova or In Search Of with Len Casper. I try to be
unpredictable too. So hopefully, when you hear my voice, you're kind of like, okay, where's he going next?
You know
what?
That's
the goal.
The ability of players, star players and journeymen, to talk about themselves and their game in baseball. Joe Sheehan asked the question about, is it just the fact that we're more aware of it or we're finding players like this, or that whole Bull Durham cliche thing, that is the average professional baseball player better at talking about baseball? My answer is yes. That on average, whether it's Taylor Davis or the recently retired Cody Decker, all these guys, there are so many guys who have had to work so hard at understanding their game. The game is much more intellectualized, and we understand from the MVP machine how there are liaisons now. There's an entire cohort. There's a generation of players bridging the gap between the old crusty guys to a much more analytical mind. And I think, Len, that you're going to find a treasure trove of these guys who, at that level, at the end of the major league benches or the middle of the benches, working on their game, who are increasingly really good at talking about ball.
I totally agree, and two more examples that just came to mind. Justin Turner, maybe my most interesting interview of the year, and he went through the whole Doug Latta journey. And the way I looked at it, and I told him in the interview, I said, whether you feel this way about yourself or not, you truly are a pioneer, mm-hmm. and it's not just because of launch angle and all of that stuff, but you were kind of the first high-profile guy who had been in the big leagues for three or four years and thought, if I don't do something drastic here, I'm going to be out of the league. And it's the idea of being self-aware enough to know that what I'm doing is not working. And he gave me a really good answer about that. And as part of the answer, and you guys have read MVP Machine, think of this name as being kind of a flashpoint benchmark guy, Marlon Byrd.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No doubt.
And even though he went through the steroid thing, he was all about launch angle. And he basically told Justin Turner, come with me. We're going to figure this out. And it's really an incredible part of the story that is in the book. But Turner also talked to me about Marlon Byrd and the influence he had on him. And then in turn, I think Turner has influenced the Max Muncys and Chris Taylors of the world. That part of it is totally fascinating. The other interview I did, which is great, Nolan Arenado, I just asked him about his glove. And he gave me like 3 minutes about his glove. He uses the same model that he bought in high school. His dad got one from a junior college coach. I mean, guys love talking about that stuff, and I think fans really dig hearing about those specific things regarding their equipment.
Len, appreciate it, man. Great chat today. Have a wonderful call on Friday.
I can't wait. It's going to be nice and toasty at the ballpark.
Yes, it is.
Boy. Yeah. Len Casper, who joins us weekly to talk about the Cubs.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.